There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad to have you here, live local talk over the hour. And I'd love to hear from you as well. And I want to, I have Representative Stringer on and Chief Stringer on to talk about a couple issues in Montgomery, and one of them being the vaping bill that he's discussed with us in the past. But I do, I mean, what a person uniquely qualified, I think, to talk about this prison issue in Alabama, because you have somebody with a lifetime of experience in law enforcement, of course, Police Chief Shane Stringer, but also Representative Stringer. So, you know, on both of those items, I got to say, I want to get your take on it. Thanks for being on.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's, I mean, we just got done talking last hour. A subject we've talked about quite a few times on this show, and I know it's not, politically, it's not popular. There's a lot of other things and bills that have people in agreement and all this, and the idea of spending taxpayer money or wherever the money comes from on expanding prison facilities in Alabama is not popular, but it's going to be necessary. Do you agree or disagree?
Yes, I totally agree. As a law enforcement officer for 28 years and having that perspective, and now the legislative perspective, we have got to address this and come up with a good balance of dealing with the prison issue. You know, and it's a lot of, everyone is affected by it in our state. It's not just the correction officers or the inmates. It's our communities.
Yeah, I look at the scenario that was laid out for what happened in California, and they didn't do what they were told under DOJ. Here they come in, and the feds made them just release prisoners. Like, the state didn't choose whom. They made them release prisoners and then build new prisons, and the citizens had to pay for the new prison build, plus had an increased crime rate when those criminals went back out on the streets.
And that's what we're facing in Alabama if we don't address this and deal with it on our own. You know, as we all know, it's better to police ourselves, and let's deal with our issues before someone else has to deal with them.
It's good to get your perspective on it, because I think sometimes people hear this conversation and say it's like some idea of going, you know, soft on crime. Y'all, that's something that Chief Stringer doesn't do. So it's good to have your take
on that.
That's
right. Yes, sir.
And so this is, at least the rumor mill is, and you can confirm what you know or don't know on this, that the governor would call a special to have y'all back, I guess, in September to deal with this?
And that's what we're hearing also as the legislators. And everyone, there's a lot of chatter about this topic anyway, and everyone is in the process of coming up with ideas and solutions to help with this problem.
Also on the work to be done in Montgomery, y'all just have the way I count it, like maybe 9 days. Do you see working into next week, or what are you thinking? When do y'all end?
It's projected we're going to end around the first week of June. So, you know, we probably will not have enough time to address the prison systems. It would not, you know, surprise me if we don't wind up in a special session to deal with it, so we can focus on that and that alone.
Okay, I got to ask you this, because as the subjects everybody does want to talk about, and that's the lottery. Y'all got it in the House now. What's when you gavel in tomorrow? Would you think y'all will be working through this lottery bill?
Yes. You know, from what we're hearing, we will face it this week, and hearing a lot of positive stuff. There has been some projected amendments. Be interested to see what those, you know, what the amendments will be and how they will affect it. And you know, I suspect from what we're hearing from the public and our communities that it's going to, you know, the lottery bill will pass in some shape, form, or fashion.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, because what I've been hearing from people that in Montgomery said, hey, they're worried that the changes that have been made in the House, and I mean, there are probably many of them you can list down, but the big one I'm thinking about is that change to have 25% of the allocation for the lottery go to ETF and 75% for general fund, that would be enough to break loose votes. I guess it came out of the Senate at 21 votes. I mean, the narrowest of margins out of the Senate, and that something could be done. You know, what was done in the House may cause the Senate not to sign off on it.
Well, and that's a possibility, you know, with the Senate. But, you know, I just don't see how they can argue against let's put 25% of that toward our education and our school system in Alabama. You know, we've got to work on moving our school system higher in the ranks. We're too far down the ranks, and we need to focus on that. And this is a good opportunity to do that.
Right, Don. Let's talk about the subject. Last time you were on with us, we talked about the vaping bill that you're part of moving in Montgomery. Where does it stand right now?
It is on the governor's desk, awaiting signature from her, and we're hoping that will happen. You know, here in the next week or two.
Explain to folks, too, let's, I guess, hit the rewind here, and the situation as it stands now, what is the law or not the law, what is the law in Alabama, and then what are y'all trying to change?
In Alabama, we are one of three states that do not regulate the sales of vaping devices to minors. The only law that Alabama has on the books pertains to a minor not being able to distribute, sell, or possess a vaping product. You know, that's just not good enough. We're one of three states in Alabama, in the country, and we needed to address that, and we did. This bill will make it illegal for retailers of any sort to sell vaping devices to anyone under 19. It will also put the vaping industry under the supervision and regulations of the ABC board, and it will also regulate new businesses opening up near or around schools or churches. And it also affects the advertising on billboards near schools or churches.
All right. Come on, Chief Strigger, Representative Chief Strigger. Dear churches, there are a lot of people, I'm pretty sure, in my church that, you know, I can smell the strawberry smell when they hit the cars out in the parking lot that they're vaping. Don't tell me folks at church are not vaping out in the parking lot, because they are.
Yes, and we're seeing it everywhere. And the good thing with this does not affect the adults. You know, this bill is not in any way, shape, form designed to affect adults and anything that they want to do. This is only to deal with our youth and our children. You know, throughout, I've got 11 schools in my district, and every one of them have came to me with this issue and this problem, and basically they're saying around 70 to 75% of their disciplinary problems are children vaping in school.
70 to 75%? You're kidding me.
Yes, it's a large number. This has really became an epidemic. You know, we have received a lot of support from the different drug education councils and the different voice groups across Alabama in this fight. And this was a fight. This was not an easy. If there was not a lot of money being made by Big Tobacco, then this would have been an easy carry. But they really fought hard and, you know, struggled. And the only reason for them to do that was of the money that's being made.
Okay, so if people understand, so as the law stands now, the stuff, and I'll make the nicotine juice is the unscientific term I use, that goes in these devices, that has been illegal for minors, for people under 19, not minors, people under 19, right?
The FDA regulates that, but no one enforces that.
Really? Okay, so when you say the devices, is that going after the devices, does that mean we'll also go after the stuff that goes inside them?
Yes, this bill will affect the device and the liquid that is used in these devices.
All right, so you said this is sitting on Governor Ivey's desk, so it's up to her right now.
Yes, and I have spoken to her about this, and she has indicated that she is a strong supporter of this bill.
All right, and a subject you and I have talked about many times, but when I have you on the phone like this, you know I got to ask, any word on any of the infrastructure money being spent? Anything coming for Highway 45 for four-laning?
We are working on this. I met with Governor Ivey, myself and two other legislators met with her 2 weeks ago and her staff, and brought up some valid points and why we need to address Highway 45. And she was very receptive to what we were saying and advised that she is going to give this project a serious look. So we will continue to fight this fight and continue to be a voice in Montgomery to address this. I mean, 45 is the deadliest highway in Alabama.
Really? The deadliest? And that should be all it takes, of course, is explaining that. That should be. But I've kind of know a little bit of how Montgomery works and things. You've got to be able to make the case also. The number of vehicles that come down 45 that are going, I mean, somebody who arrives in Baldwin County, right, to go down to the beaches, they quite often they came through Citronelle.
That's correct. You know, and that's what we explained to her also. This is also, Highway 45 is an evacuation route during hurricanes. So that's another priority that should give it some more reason to look at it. And also the now we have the Amazon Shipping Center, the Walmart Shipping Center. We have the shipping container terminal in Mobile. We have so many more distribution points that are coming out of Mobile. And, of course, going up 45 into Mississippi, into Arkansas, and different areas. Another issue that we, you know, brought to her attention is that just what you said, all the tourism that is coming basically all the way from Chicago down, coming to our beaches and coming down to go on tour, cruise terminals in Mobile and New Orleans. So, you know, we've got a lot more increased traffic. Highway 45 in Mississippi and all the way to Chicago is four lane.
Wow. Wow. And that would be, I mean, that's when we talk about improvements of 45. That's the major, I'm sure there's subtlety for this area for passing or this or that. But, I mean, we're talking about four lane in this thing, right?
Yes, sir.
And so the governor is aware of this, the monetary side and the public safety side.
That's right. And she was, you know, she was real receptive whenever I mentioned the part about 45 being four lane from Chicago all the way to the Alabama state line, where it goes back to two lanes, and that really got her attention. So
yeah. Good.
I really hope and pray that we can stay on this project and get some. You know, I understand that there's been legislators for years and years and years working on this, but now with the infrastructure money we have, you know, with our budget the states have now, so I'm hoping this is the time that we can address some of these issues and fix some wrongs that have let go over the years.
Yeah, if we just get the governor in the car with us, we'll go ride through Citronelle, and then we'll ride up past the split, and 17 will peel off, and then we'll be on two lane, and then we'll hit Mississippi, and all of a sudden it's like the angels are singing. It's not every day. I say that about Mississippi, but I'm a Bama guy until I hit that section, and then it's four lane, divided, wide, safe.
That's right.
Safer. So maybe she just sees that. Well, that's good. I got a quick question on this vaping bill. Get answered before we wrap up. Why would the liquid be regulated by the ABC, and are there any new taxes or fees to pay for the new oversight? Will there be taxation that goes on with the devices and the nicotine liquid stuff?
No. When we first started the bill, we had looked at possibly doing a permit fee whenever they got their permit. But due to there not being a permit fee for the cigarettes, we wanted to keep it pretty consistent with it, so that was removed. It is not taxed as of this bill does not address that, and as of this time, maybe that's something that we can address in the near future. We'll have to look at. You know, the oversight regulations is not going to be very burden on the ABC board. They're already out doing the regulation checkpoints with the cigarettes, tobacco, and alcohol. And this will be something that they can include in those regulatory checks.
All right, well, we'll check back, and I'm sure you'll, if the governor signs off on it, you'll send us a text and let us know that's happened.
I sure will.
As always, I appreciate your time as well, Representative Stringer, also Police Chief Stringer, joining us right here on Midday Mobile. So an update there on the vaping and a couple other issues. And that 45 one, y'all hear that? So it's not just me saying how dangerous 45 is. The most dangerous road in the state of Alabama. Y'all driven around the state? There's some tough competition for the most dangerous road, and 45 gets it. And I'm here to. The stuff I've seen on that highway over the years, my goodness. All right, 121, coming right back. We'll grab some phone calls at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 126 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. By the way, too, it was good to hear Representative and Police Chief Stringer talk about the need for tackling this prison reform in the state. Because I don't want to read through the text and the emails I get on this. Maybe I do sometime. But the if you're willfully bathing in your own ignorance, I can't help you. But there's a police chief, 26 years in law enforcement, hardcore, okay? Jane Stringer, hardcore. And he's telling you something has to be done, okay? This is not this idea of, oh, it's just some people on the radio talking about going easy on prisoners. Quit just jumping. Go read the stories. Dig into it. You'll figure out why there are so many people concerned. This is not. This has to do with keeping our state from being taken over by the feds, our prison department, not the state, but the prison system, taken over. Them mandating how many people we release, and then mandating the prison builds that we have to pay for. Like, it's going to happen. I keep telling you this. And, you know, it'll be, and if nothing gets done, then, you know, next year or something, we have the federal receivership, and then everybody will be screaming. And then, you know, everybody will be at that point, ah, why didn't they do something about it? We're sitting here telling you about it right now. This is a thing. We got people that are not exactly, you know, some lefty telling you this has to be done. So, I mean, if you want to disagree after you educate yourself about it, that's fine. If you just want to just shower in a beautiful waterfall of ignorance, then leave me out of it. It just frustrates me. By the way, too, speaking of the end, within probably 9 days or so, the end of regular session in Montgomery, they've got budgets proposed out there, but, you know, there's not been a they haven't signed off. We said that early on they tackled budgets. Yeah, kind of. They went through some of the funding mechanisms, obviously, and some of the heavy lifts there. But they're still pending. The budgets are still pending. And when I say the budgets, right, if you know about Alabama, right, we have the general fund, which is 93% earmarked, only 7% in play. And then we have the ETF behind the wall. Unlike the Game of Thrones wall, it's not near as cold there. But the ETF, the Education Trust Fund. So those two, there's still changes could be made. I don't know how much will be made this late in session, but they haven't this idea that they've gotten the budget done and it's finished and all that. They're still pending. You got the $2.1 billion for the general fund and the $7.1 billion ETF, which, by the way, when we get in those discussions, how much money goes to kids or not kids, general fund, $2 billion, ETF, well, that would be $7 billion. All right, grab a call here quickly before we go to the news break. David is in Mobile. David, you got a minute here.
Hey, Sean. The four-laning of Highway 45 is the number three project on my personal list that I think needs to be done that is not Bayway-related.
Okay.
Obviously, the bridge and the bayways, you know, one, and then everything else is like double digits. But the first one would be finished the four-laning of Highway 98, because that's going to be the most cost-efficient project because of the way they're constructing it right now. They've constructed it or designed and constructed in a way they can go back and add that those two other lanes at a much, you know, much more cost-efficient way when they do the gas tax. Number two would be extending the Baldwin Beach Express to 65 and then 45. So here's an idea to kind of get it past that committee of legislators that they set up when they passed the gas tax. Do it in two parts. Four-lane it to Citronelle, and then later on when the project's coming back up for discussion, push for the four-laning all the way to the Mississippi State line.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Listen, if they get in any discussion of this, a lot better than where we've been on this, a dangerous, dangerous highway there, for sure. All right, we're coming back from the break. Todd Atkins with the NRA Institute for Legislative Action joins us. What about a lifetime concealed carry permit? Well, we'll get in the discussion when we come back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
At 136 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Text line's open for you, so is the website. You can catch podcasts of this show and some of the 40-some-odd hours a week of live local programming we do. Go grab a podcast a la carte style, or better yet, subscribe over at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Spotify. Just a couple of places where you can get our podcast, so go check those out today, plus the details on the Big Green Deal, $9,000 worth of goodies for your backyard and elsewhere for you to win this summer. Check it out online now at fmtalk1065.com. All right, I mentioned as we headed to the news that we would talk about something. I gotta tell you, well, I think I've heard of most things that come up in the discussion out there, whatever subject. I go, oh, I've heard a version of this or something a lot like this. This was something I had not thought of, and pretty interesting, because we're joined by Todd Atkins from the NRA to talk about let's see if I get the term right here. Todd, this is a lifetime carry permit?
That's right, Sean, and thanks a lot for having me on the air. This is something that is new to Alabama. It has been discussed at some length in several states, passed by a handful of them. But the basic idea, it's not really that complex. If an individual has a carry permit at the county level right now, there's going to be a brand new option for them. And I have to stress that this is an option. This won't be replacing the current system in any way, shape, or form. But this would allow an individual to go to an ALEA office, if you think of where you get your driver's license now, after they've requested a background check from their local sheriff where they live. Then they can take their background clearance to ALEA and apply for a lifetime permit. The fee will be $150. But once an individual does that, they will be done with the system, so to speak. That is, they won't have to apply again. They'll have it if they're 21 or older, 18 or older if they're in the military, and then they'll be good to go. And most law-abiding gun owners I talk to just think it sounds like a great idea, and I believe it is as well.
Yeah, Todd, there have been, of course, the recent changes in not being yearly for the concealed carry permits, being able to go for multiple years, up to, I think, 5 now in Alabama for your permit, right. Which is convenient for a lot of people, not having to have another thing to remember each year. This one, well, I wouldn't have to remember it till ever. Unless what? Is there an unless what? I mean, what if I'm issued this lifetime carry permit? So I've got this, which is nice because if I may or may not carry a handgun, I'd be interested in reciprocity with other states. So would this serve that same function?
Well, it could, and I won't speak for other states right now, because other states largely make that decision. The reciprocity agreements they engage with, it's always the two states getting together about what their permits look like, what their permits require, which type of individuals are not provided a permit. So I won't speak for other states right now because we simply don't know. But conveniently, and one of the arguments I've heard from some of the sheriffs is, well, 21 is relatively young in a person's life, and this is a long time that somebody could have a permit. But what they leave out of that argument is ALEA, under these bills, will be required to conduct a background check of individuals every 4 years.
Okay.
Right now, you can go 5 years without getting a background check. But under this bill, ALEA, because that's their kind of their process for driver's license renewals, the four-year calendar. So we're gonna have those type of background checks pursuant to somebody with a lifetime permit. So that's a red herring that's being thrown around, and it just simply isn't the case. And further, the sheriffs are provided the same authority. ALEA's provided the same authority that exists under the current system, in which if they become aware of information about an individual that would prohibit that individual from possessing a firearm, they can start a revocation process immediately. Again, another red herring, as there's no way we will know that somebody will have a permit. We'll never be able to revoke that permit if they engage in prohibiting activity of which they're convicted. Not the case at all. Another red herring.
Just joining us, talking to Todd Atkins from the NRA Institute for Legislative Action and this idea of a lifetime carry permit. But it's good to hear that, because you beat me to my next questions. I mean, it's a lifetime carry permit in seeing that you obey the rules, right? If you did the same things you could do now for a revocation, the same things that would lead to a revocation under the standard with the 67 counties and all that could happen every 4 years now.
That's right. And what I pointed out in testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee last week, and I must say the Senate Bill 392, was passed by that committee on a bipartisan 8-1 vote. Because these are very strong measures, right? What I pointed out is I'm not sure, I'm not going to allege anything about how much the sheriffs talk to one another, but if somebody in this, let's say the southeast corner of the state where or the southwest corner where you are, an individual engages in a prohibiting act and then they are convicted or otherwise adjudicated, I'm not real sure how soon a sheriff in the northeast county is going to know about that fact. Well, part of this system that will be created with this lifetime permit are various requirements for reporting by the counties, by court systems, into ALEA, which obviously is a state agency. So they, as a state agency, will be able to get this information statewide as soon as they can possibly get it. So from a public safety standpoint, as well as for law enforcement officers having to make stops at 3:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. that terminal in that cruiser is now going to be about as up-to-date as we can make it. And frankly, I would say for the first time, I've heard horror stories about, under the current system, dispatchers having to call other dispatchers about an individual that's been detained at the side of a road, and the information is not at all clear about whether or not this individual poses a danger to anybody. Well, this will create the system that those law enforcement officers need to get about the best information we can to them when they actually need it.
Todd, I'll grab the low-hanging fruit here before somebody hits me up to ask this question. So okay. how much money are we talking about here for a lifetime?
It's a $150 fee to the individual making the application.
And that money goes to ALEA or the counties, or how's that done?
It's split 60-40, 60 to ALEA to administer the program, and then 40% to the sheriff who has to conduct the background check. And okay. we recognize we don't want to just support a bill that creates another unfunded mandate to folks. So $60 to the county sheriffs when somebody pays the $150 fee.
Okay. And you mentioned the Senate bill. Is the bill just in the Senate? What if somebody's wants to look into this, get more information, talk about, advocate for it, or whatever they want to do, what are they, is there a Senate bill number? What are we looking at?
Okay, we've got companion bill, Senate Bill 392 in the Senate. That has been passed out of the Senate Judiciary, so could be taken up on the Senate floor as soon as this week. On the House side, we have House Bill 595. That is currently awaiting a vote in the Public Safety Committee on the House side, Public Safety and Homeland Security. And we expect that to be acted upon this week, an actual vote taken in the Public Safety Committee either tomorrow or Wednesday.
All right. And then on the other side of this, and you mentioned the sheriffs in this, and in the discussions of the past, different bills that have come up to do away, you know, entirely with having concealed carry permits in the state or have it voluntary for people who want to have, you know, reciprocity issues. But those issues have been opposed by the entire Sheriff's Association, and I would guess, I'm not sure, by the majority of individual sheriffs. This one, you're saying, has the same kind of pushback from sheriff's departments, or is it different? What are y'all seeing at the NRA?
It does have the same level of pushback, or at least in my experience, the same level of pushback. And in fact, in the House hearing, the public hearing on House Bill 595 last week, the Sheriff's Association did testify against this bill. Now, I will say that the arguments that were presented are the ones that I talked about earlier.
The red herrings.
That 21 is too early for somebody to have this lifetime permit. And I will say that, and the same is true about permitless carry, is we spend a lot of time worrying about prohibited people and people who shouldn't have a firearm or are prohibited from possessing a firearm. And what we at the NRA are trying to do in supporting this bill is recognize that we should twist our kind of where we're looking a little bit, at least, and recognize that law-abiding citizens should have an option like this when they decide how they want to protect themselves and their family. And this bill makes sense at on a number of levels, certainly recognizes that law-abiding citizens should have this choice, number one. And number two, when I listen to the sheriffs opposing permitless or constitutional carry, what I repeatedly heard is this permit provides a valuable law enforcement tool to them that shouldn't be taken away. Now we have a valuable lifetime permit, right, that is not only valuable to law-abiding citizens but members of law enforcement, and now we find another way in which they can oppose, this measure. And I would say we need to think about the law-abiding citizens first, maybe perhaps for the first time, and what is appropriate for them. And I would say that providing them this option, and that's all it is, it doesn't replace anything in the current system or process, this option to make this choice on their own behalf when it comes to defending themselves, I think we just need to do that. And if we can provide information in each of these cruisers in this state, whether they be a trooper, a sheriff, a local town police officer, information that will help protect them and the public, then I say, why should anybody stand in the way of that?
Appreciate your time today, Todd. If people want to go, we talked about the House and the Senate bill number, but anything on the NRA's website or anywhere to, like, is it broken down in language I can understand?
Yeah, what I would recommend is somebody just Google real simply NRA ILA, that's the Institute for Legislative Action, Alabama lifetime permit, and they will be taken. I've checked it directly to our various alerts on these bills, and they can learn more about them and engage in reaching out to their legislators and whatever it is they want.
Todd, appreciate your time today. I'll be watching.
Thanks,
this.
Sir.
Thank you. All right, coming right back, we'll wrap it up here, get a few more calls and texts through, and then Paul Feinbaum on at 2 o'clock.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I mentioned we're taking this show on the road onto a ship on Wednesday. We're back. They're having us back out. Really. It's a neat gig, other than the white-knuckle, sweaty-brow portion of guiding the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit, our studio on wheels, a big fan that we can broadcast from. Other than negotiating that up the gangplank, you've been on the USS Alabama, right? Let's hope. I mean, you live around here. Let's hope that you've done it even recently. So you go up, and you go, you know, have the gangplank where you walk up. The big wide, so you get, drive the van up that, and then you get up onto the deck of the USS Alabama, and at that point, you can't go left. We got to take a right turn, Clyde, to go to the fantail, and it's like, but you got to come off the, you can't high center. It's one of those Sprinter vans, right? So it's got like a wide stretch, so you don't want to high center this baby, so you have to already have a kind of an angle, and then you have to have a very specific angle to get between the side of the ship and where the, what would you call it? Where it comes up above the deck, that portion. It's not the tower. The tower is further back, but that area of the ship, you got to negotiate. It's like it's stressful. It's stressful, but it's so cool to do the show from the fantail that it's worth it. So we'll be up there doing Midday Mobile from noon to one on Wednesday, and then Tom and Cal, my friends with Scuttlebutt, they're going to be up there starting at 1 o'clock and going until 2. So come out and see us at the USS Alabama, of course, Battleship Memorial Park. That is on Wednesday from noon to 2. So it should be a good, good deal. It looks actually dry in our forecast. Hot, but dry in our forecast for the majority of the next 4 or 5 days, says Dr. Bill. Of course, an update coming from him just a few minutes away during the Paul Feinbaum show. All right. I want to say thank you to State Senator, first of all, Cam Ward and Representative Shane Stringer being on today. That discussion, and I'm still looking at text and still trying to go through text here about the prison reform issue. I want to just keep people focused on that. Not because it's fun. Lord knows nobody wants to talk about it, right? Except it's a really big deal if we go into federal receivership. So just understand that part of it. as long as you have any kind of opinion, yes or no, just make sure you understand the nuance of the discussion. Is that fair? All right. Also, people talking about the danger on Highway 45. Yep. Ben says I drive it twice a day most days. Company van, don't speed. And unbelievably dangerous the way people act on that road. Well, you know, Benjamin, here's what I think. And you could, people that are Highway 45 drivers like me, I'd love your take on it. But my take is this, that you have a dangerous mix of kinds of, okay, there's some roads where just there's a lot of slow drivers, and there's some roads that are like an American version of the Autobahn, like the 165 connector, right? I mean, what it is about it, I don't know, it's raised, so therefore you raise your speed or whatever. The connector is like a speed racer derby. 45 is a mix of local traffic, right? People just coming and going from work to the house or up to the store and back to the house, or coming from Citronelle, they're going to Citronelle, they're going down to Gulf Crest, they're going up to, you know, they're heading up to go to Tibby, whatever they're doing. They're on 45 doing local things, which some people might just do this silly thing called the speed limit. I'm not trying to act like I'm perfect here, because maybe I don't do the speed limit, but they're doing the speed limit. Then you have a mix of people who just drive like they think they're on the connector. They're driving like they're on a four-lane divided highway, driving incredibly fast just to go wherever. Okay, now they're mixed in with the people that are doing speed limit or 5 miles over. And then add into this some travel-weary folks that are probably getting on the accelerator pretty good, that are coming in from Memphis or coming in from somewhere in Arkansas or Missouri or something. They're heading down to the beach, right? They're coming down, and that's the most direct route for them to come down and hit 45 and come in. Then they hit this two-lane 45. Now, they've been traveling at a good clip for quite a long time. You know that feeling? Don't tell me you don't, where you've been traveling like long, long, long road trips, like 8-hour road trips, and you get off the interstate and now you're driving like at 35 miles an hour and it feels like you're crawling. Well, if they've been traveling like that down the divided four lane and all of a sudden get here, then they kind of got a little bit of let's get around these people. So you put all that stuff together on a two-lane road that in a lot of areas has pretty narrow shoulders because of the way the roads build up, and you get a very dangerous combination. And that's, you know, and that's why, and in my estimation, why, as Representative Stringer said, 45 is the deadliest road in Alabama. Y'all get that? Deadliest road in Alabama. And it's one I travel so much. So, yes, I have a dog in that hunt. Let's go to Aiden in Citronelle. He lives in Citronelle. Well, I hope we didn't. Dalton, what happened? Did we? I hope nothing happened to him on 40. Was he on 45? You don't want to, if you're on 45, you don't want to try to wait till you pull over. I'd say you pull over Bertil's, get yourself a burger, and then call me. Problem is, we've run out of time for this week, this day. We'll pick it up tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings. And of course, I'll be back tomorrow for Midday Mobile, just 22 hours from right now. All right, Paul Feinbaum show's next. Remember, check us out online. And Sports Night tonight with Dalton and Corey. Of course, another great show. They got some cool interviews booked. But I'd like to point out, too, that Sports Night, up for its own nappy. If you go to votenappies.com, you'll see all the categories that we're very, very honored that y'all nominated us in the media category for FM Talk 106.5. We have lots of different shows around here. One of them, my man Dalton and Corey's show, that's Sports Night. You can hear it tonight and vote for it in the nappies right now at votenappies.com. All right, y'all have a good one. See you mañana.